What's at stake on November 5? We'll talk about it.
This is the chance to put the final nail in the coffin so that you don't have Donald Trump on the ballot again.
Welcome to Understanding the Times Radio with Jan Markell, radio for the remnant, brought to you by Olive Tree Ministries. Today, Jan spends the hour with Michelle Bachmann, former candidate for President of the United States, discussing our forthcoming presidential election. How might this election affect you and those you love? Freedom is at stake. Here is today's uninterrupted programming.
The group Evangelicals for Harris hosted a Zoom call this month that drew tens of thousands. The founder, Reverend Jim Ball, the former head of a Christian environmental organization, says the group plans to reach beyond a progressive audience.
We're trying to reach out to as many conservative folks as we can.
You are.
Yeah, we try to reach out to websites that are highly visited by Trump supporters, by so-called MAGA Republicans.
You think there's an opportunity there?
We do.
The group's 200,000 members are focused mainly in swing states. They're planning to spend more than $1 million on video ads targeting specific Christian households on places like YouTube, Hulu, Apple TV, Google, and Facebook. Their first ad goes after Donald Trump.
Have you ever asked God for forgiveness? That's a tough question. I'm not sure I have. I don't bring God into that picture. I don't.
While taking on Trump could be a tall order, they believe there's an opening. Among his base of white evangelical Protestant voters, 37% see Trump as a great president. 37% say a good one. The window may be that 9% consider him average, 6% poor, 10% say terrible. Those three categories total 25% of conservative evangelicals who could potentially be difference makers. We saw that happen for Barack Obama in 2008 when he received 26% of this key group and won. And again in 2020 as Joe Biden received 24% and also won. In 2016, Hillary Clinton lost after receiving only 16% of conservative evangelical voters.
If Kamala Harris can, let's just say, get over 20% or more, she's in business.
We're hoping that we'll have an historic amount this time, so we'll see.
Obama levels, maybe.
Yes, Obama levels, that's right. We're hoping for that.
Conservatives say evangelicals shouldn't fall for this worldview, which they believe is Christian socialism, leftist thought, identity politics, and Marxist-driven liberation theology all rolled into one. Biblical scholar Robert Gagnon calls Evangelicals for Harris an oxymoron, indeed an insult to our intelligence. And the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission says, quote, "Unfortunately, the positions that Harris has our track record of supporting and advocating for would lead to a devaluing of marriage, the deaths of the preborn, and a restricting of religious liberty for people of faith."
Thank you, CBN News, for that excellent review there. We're now just days away from the 2024 election. I'm going to be quite political this hour. Michelle Bachmann will be joining me in just a moment or two. We're looking at the most important election probably in 150 years. Certainly the most important election in modern times. Maybe a cliche, but it is true. And we're going to cover mainly election-related news and information this hour, and it will be uninterrupted. And as I speak, millions of Christians, up to 40 million and maybe more, evangelicals, in fact, have no intention of voting. The topic doesn't interest you. Some of you say that you are a citizen of heaven and not earth. Even the Bible would have an issue with that kind of thinking, to be honest. Until we're in heaven, we're to make a difference on this earthly home. We're to delay the decay. So it's our contention that it is the duty and responsibility of every Christian to vote and to vote for leaders who promote Christian principles. God is certainly in control, but that does not mean we should do nothing to further his will. Candidates or proposals that violate the Bible's commands for life, family, marriage, and faith, quite frankly, folks, they cannot be supported. And we would admit, too, that all candidates are flawed. That's not an excuse to stay home. I just want to play a couple of quick clips here to demonstrate the almost demonic hatred that is out there. Listen here to the words of a leftist professor who says, we should shoot those who won't vote for a female candidate.
Guys are smarter than girls. You got some serious problems. That's what frustrates me. There are going to be some males in our society that will refuse to vote for a potential female president because they don't think females are smart enough to be president. We could line all those guys up and shoot them. They clearly don't understand the way the world works. Did I say that? Scratch that from the recording. I don't want the deans hearing that I said that.
Just a quick clip. This is Jessica Tarlov, shamefully Fox News contributor. She is on the left, of course.
This is the chance to put the final nail in the coffin so that you don't have Donald Trump on the ballot again.
Really, Jessica? A man who has now had multiple assassination threats against him, and this is a chance to put a nail in a coffin. Just a sampling of some comments. There are more. If there's time, I'll play them, but I want to get to my guest. Michelle Bachman is Dean of the Robertson School of Government at Regent University. She served in Congress from 2007 to 2014. She ran for president in 2012. Michelle, welcome back to the program.
Jan, it's always great to be with you. Thank you.
Your thoughts on just a couple of those quick clips I played?
Well, we're at a volatile time in the election cycle. And what we need to know is that the past is prologue. Kamala Harris is very understandable. It's very easy to know who she is. She's demonstrated through her life and her actions and her voting patterns who she is. But always at this point in election cycle, people recognize that someone with her point of view could never get elected. Mm-hmm. She's far more left than Bernie Sanders. And so now this is the pretending period. And she has to pretend that she's someone that she's not. So that's why she's come out and done a 180 on many issue positions. And she stands for something during the election cycle that she will never stand for if she wins election. She'll throw off those moderate positions faster than you can say election night, on election night. So I think what we're seeing is that this is a descent of humanity in this election cycle. It's ugly. It's mean. Much of it is fake. But now it's actually deadly. And we've had two assassination attempts, and potentially there was a third man with guns near the president in California. So we're looking at an election that you and I can't even recognize. It bears no resemblance to any elections in the past.
It seems like the globalists, and you and I have talked about this before, they want a crisis. As a matter of fact, the globalists are promising a polycrisis. That's their term, multiple crises. And I sometimes think they're not just sitting around waiting for, they cause these crises. I think you would probably agree with me.
Well, they do. And they already know what their agenda is. And it's one world government, and it's top-down control with people having less and less control over decision-making in their life. Let's face it, these are depopulation people. That's their ultimate goal. So they know what they want. We're all told that Donald Trump doesn't believe in democracy. It's just the opposite. It's these totalitarians who want one world government, the globalists. They hate the choice of the individual person. So they're trying to do everything they can to tilt the table in favor of Kamala Harris. Their problem is they have a terrible candidate on their hand that people don't like. And the more they see about her, the less they like her. Because she doesn't stand for a better America, for lower prices, for a safer America or a safer world or safer Israel. She stands for everything that most normal people abhor. So she's not a pro-family, pro-life, pro-marriage person. That's what the average person is. And she doesn't seem to have much of an understanding of the economy or of foreign policy. Why she's even being considered president of the United States is beyond me. She can't string seven sentences together. So it's hard to believe that she could ever possibly handle the duties of a president.
I opened the program with a clip from Evangelicals for Harris. You know it well. It sounds like a bit of an oxymoron. I know some evangelicals who are in alignment with Evangelicals for Harris. As a matter of fact, one of them, Ray Ortland, says on his social media, Ray Ortland, I was at your wedding many years ago, your wife Jan, I grew up with. I don't understand your posting things like, never Trump, this time Harris, always Jesus. I don't understand this mindset, Michelle. This is among evangelical Christians.
No, it's a Jesus that doesn't align with the Jesus of the Bible. This is not a biblical worldview understanding. This has nothing to do with Republican, Democrat. We aren't talking Republican, Democrat today. What we're talking about is biblical, how politics lines up with biblical or is anti-biblical. And that's why if you look at Kamala Harris and Tim Walz is a serial liar. He's the fellow running for vice president. And he lied about the issue of what he did on abortion. This is the most radical abortion ticket we've ever had. Both of them believe in no restrictions at all on abortion. A woman can go through a late-term abortion and give birth to a baby. This happens thousands of times where it's called a, quote, failed abortion. It's actually a blessing because a baby is born alive. And in the case of Tim Walz, there were 8 babies that were born alive under Tim Walz, and they were allowed to be set on a table and die on his watch. That's where Kamala Harris is at. So they believe that a baby should be left to die even after a baby is born alive. Both of them believe this. Now, how could that possibly line up with Jesus? And how does someone want to speak for Jesus and say that Jesus would be okay with abortion up until the moment of breath or with late-term abortion? Or how could anyone stand up and say that Jesus would be for the chemical castration of children and the physical mutilation of children's bodies? It doesn't. And so these people are being duplicitous. In other words, they're lying. But someone who truly has given their life to Jesus Christ, who believes that the Bible is the authoritative word of God, can't possibly stand in alignment with the viewpoint of a Harris or a Walz.
I'm going to play a soundbite of you, Michelle. It's actually going to emphasize a few thoughts that you've just spoken now, but I'd like you to expound on a little bit. And by the way, you have gathered the information and evidence in a 13-page paper, which we now have on the homepage of olivetreeviews.org. Scroll down just a little bit. You'll see Michelle's picture. And you'll see a link where you can click on and read some of what she's talking about here.
And this is probably the most macabre thing that he did, to repeal the Born Alive Act. I mean, as pro-abortion as you want to be for Tim Walz, this is a step too far. Now you have a living, breathing human being. And you're saying to the medical doctors, do not help that struggling young human being to live. We only want to kill the unborn. We don't want to save or protect the unborn. And I'm not being overly demonstrative when I say that. That's exactly the position that he put into place. So we are anti-family now in Minnesota because of Tim Walz. We're anti-child in Minnesota because of Tim Walz. Anti-faith, protecting religion in Minnesota. And we're anti-life in Minnesota. You've never seen a worse agenda than the agenda that was passed in 2023. As a matter of fact, Father Frank, the Holy Spirit was kind of speaking to me before that 2023 legislative session in Minnesota. And I had a sense that I was supposed to follow it and pay attention. And so I did, together with a researcher. We compiled a 13-page summary of what happened in that session. And literally, it was hard for me to even write it and read it again because it was a culture of death. You used that term with me many times. It was a culture of death agenda that Tim Walz put into place. And this is really illustrative. People need to understand, if Kamala Harris and Tim Walz win in the elections in less than a month from now, then the whole United States of America will have a culture of death agenda pushed on us. Not just in Minnesota, where we're suffering under Tim Walz, but across the entire United States. I don't care if you're a red state, if you're a very conservative state, the Walz-Harris agenda plans to push this entire pro-death agenda in every state and undo every pro-life protection there is. She has said it herself, Vice President Harris, as President of the United States, she would memorialize in our Constitution a constitutional amendment that would prescribe abortion as a fundamental right. Minnesota has that. Tim Walz did that. Abortion was the number one issue for Tim Walz. He pushed this bill through so fast, no one even knew what the words were on the paper, because he wanted to ensure that the culture of death, the fundamental right to abortion up until the moment of birth, would be enshrined in the Minnesota Constitution. I will tell you, that is completely antithetical to the way most people in Minnesota believe. He didn't care. He wanted his pro-death agenda that was paid for by Planned Parenthood, and he delivered. And that's why he is on Kamala Harris's ticket as the vice presidential candidate today, because he was very happy, all too compliant at putting forth a pro-death agenda. And then he had the guts to lie about it during the vice presidential debate. He said that J.D. Vance had misread the law in Minnesota. J.D. Vance didn't misread the law. Everything J.D. Vance said on that stage that night was true. What he was pointing out about Tim Walz, it was Tim Walz who lied about his own agenda, because even he knew that his agenda was so radical, he couldn't admit to what it was that he had passed.
You're listening to Understanding the Times Radio. I'm Jan Markell. I have on the line from Virginia, Michelle Bachmann. You may recall that she was in the United States Congress between 2007 and 2014, ran for president in 2012. Michelle, you were blunt there and might as well be. You have no choice at this point. I think even your family business, Marcus's business, has come under some persecution because you're in Minnesota under Tim Walz and the Democrats.
Well, you know, our state does have a two-tier system of justice. If you are on the politically correct side, in other words, if you favor Tim Walz's radical agenda, you don't have to worry about your business. You can even commit crimes like fraud, or maybe even literally get away with murder, as we've seen some young kids get away with murder in Minnesota. But if you're not, then they'll make up something to come after you or your business. Justice is supposed to be blind. And under Tim Walz, that's something that we've seen that isn't true. And the same thing at the federal level. It's really quite shocking. You'll hear coming out of Kamala Harris's mouth, and you'll hear it coming out of Tim Walz's mouth. They will say that their opponents are doing what they're doing. I'm shocked to hear Kamala Harris say that if Donald Trump is elected, he'll use the Department of Justice to go after his political opponents. It's like, are you kidding me? Here we had Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats using the impeachment process to unjustly impeach Donald Trump twice for things that he didn't do. And then we had the Department of Justice involved in at least four major lawsuits against Donald Trump to bankrupt him, to put him in jail. It's incredible how every one of these lawsuits that the Department of Justice seemed to be involved in and orchestrating behind the scenes, each one of them have fallen apart. Not one of them has been able to come forward and do something to Donald Trump that's going to stick. It's because they're all fake. They're all a lie. They project on their political opponents what they themselves have done. That's really what's concerning, because it isn't just big people that are going to be hurt, powerful people, wealthy people, famous people. It's little people. It's people like us. It's normal people who are going to be impacted. Because if we go against what Walz and Harris want, they don't act under the Constitution. They act under what their political agenda is. That's what's very concerning, because the Constitution is there to protect every single person's right, whether we agree with each other or not. Our rights are protected just the same, whether we're on one political aisle or another. But under Walz and Harris, that's not the way it is. They will only protect the rights of people who are on their side of issues, and they would just as soon people go to jail or be bankrupted or have their rights restricted if they disagree with Walz and Harris. And Walz said that we have to lose our First Amendment rights, that we can't go on social media and say what we want to say, because we can only say what we want to say if we agree with the government narrative, if we agree with Walz and Harris's position. This is a complete violation of the Constitution. And we've seen attacks in previous administrations. Now, if Walz and Harris get in, there will be zero restraint. They will move forward and they'll seek to prosecute people who go on social media or who have the temerity to speak publicly against them.
Here's a clip of John Kerry. Now it's preceded by a few seconds of Hillary Clinton saying, "We're about to lose control." She's talking about the left. "We're about to lose control." And that morphs into John Kerry complaining about the First Amendment, as you've just said.
We should be, in my view, repealing something called Section 230, which gave platforms on the internet immunity because they were thought to be just pass-throughs, that they shouldn't be judged for the content that is posted. But we now know that that was an overly simple view, that if the platforms, whether it's Facebook or Twitter X or Instagram or TikTok, whatever they are, if they don't moderate and monitor the content, we lose total control. And it's not just the social and psychological effects, it's real harm.
Look, if people go to only one source and the source they go to is sick and has an agenda and they're putting out disinformation, our First Amendment stands as a major block to the ability to be able to just hammer it out of existence.
That's today's left, Michelle.
That's today's left, and that is the presidential ticket that people are about to vote on. They agree with John Kerry and with Hillary Clinton. And now look at what Hillary Clinton just said. She was saying that Mark Zuckerberg at Facebook and Instagram and Elon Musk at X, all of these major social media platforms, she's saying they're the problem. They aren't censoring enough. You've been censored with your program. Other conservative outlets have been censored already. And what she's saying is that these social media platforms are essentially an arm of the government and that they have to jump to the tune of the federal government. Do you realize how frightening this is? We're talking about communist China, communist Russia, communist North Korea. That's what those nations do. And she and John Kerry and Harris and Walz want the United States to be a replica of communist China. But that makes sense for Tim Walz. He went to communist China 35 times, and he was in business with a communist Chinese business. He was a patsy being used by the communist Chinese to bring plane loads of impressionable youth to communist China so that they could be propagandized into how wonderful communism is. In fact, Tim Walz would teach his students, "Oh, it's wonderful in China. Everyone is equal. Everyone shares," because he believes in communism. Yeah. And that's why you'll hear Donald Trump say of Kamala Harris, "She's Comrade Kamala," because she's in favor of communism. This is unbelievable that in 2024, we have a major political party ticket where the philosophy that they espouse is communism, Marxism. They don't say that, but that's what they believe. That's what they've talked. That's what they voted on. And that's what we'll get after the election. These phony evangelicals for Harris, they're not evangelicals. They're Marxists. And they need to reveal to the world who they really are.
Listening to Understanding the Times, this is Jan Markell. Just a real quick reminder here, asking you if you would think about pre-ordering my book coming out in early November. It's titled When Jesus Returns, Living in the Expectation of the End Times, forward by Amir Sarfati, published by Harvest House. But pre-orders are handled by Amazon. That's how the industry handles new books. It is a compilation of the best messages given at my conferences in suburban Minneapolis over about 23 years or so, and pre-ordering tells the retail outfits like Target or Barnes & Noble that they should carry a book with a Christian message, and I would hope that's what we all want, is for the gospel to get into very, very secular outfits. It's out in early November, and you'll be able to order it through Olive Tree at a reduced price. Again, the title is When Jesus Returns, Living in the Expectation of the End Times. Michelle, another issue so relevant right now because of leftist lunacy, I would have to say, would be this rising spiral of crime. This is just a quick clip I want to play and get your feedback on it. It happens to be Martha Raddatz and J.D. Vance.
The media took my videos at face value and didn't do any research of their own. So they immediately said, oh, this can't be true, or this is only a few apartments. How many is okay? Hello, my name is Cindy Romero. I'm from Aurora, Colorado. I used to reside at 1218 Dallas Street, apartment 304. I was pushed out of my apartment by gang activity, people carrying guns in the hallway and patrolling the grounds with guns. And now I'm speaking out because I've released my video that proves the existence of gangs in Aurora. I feel like the mayor and the governor and the APD all downplay the situation.
President Trump was actually in Aurora, Colorado, talking to people on the ground. And what we're hearing, of course, Martha, is that people are terrified by what has happened with some of these Venezuelan gangs.
Senator Vance, I'm going to stop you because I know exactly what happened. Martha. I'm going to stop you. The incidents were limited to a handful of apartment complexes, and the mayor said our dedicated police officers have acted on those concerns. A handful of problems.
Only, Martha, do you hear yourself? Only a handful of apartment complexes in America were taken over by Venezuelan gangs, and Donald Trump is the problem and not Kamala Harris's open border?
I feel like it's a slap in the face. I'm a taxpayer. I pay my rent. I pay my bills. I do what I'm supposed to do. I feel like the media took my videos at face value and didn't do any research of their own. So they immediately said, oh, this can't be true, or this is only a few apartments. How many is okay? There were six people outside my door with guns. That's not counting all the other ones they used to patrol the property with guns. How many gangs is okay to have in Aurora? How many properties is okay to take over? How many people who are citizens paying their bills is it okay to displace? Is it okay if they come to your neighborhood, for example?
Michelle Bachman, your thoughts and your comment, please.
Aurora, Colorado is a nice suburban area outside of Denver where people have invested their life savings in their houses and in their businesses. Their cars are there. And now, because of Kamala Harris and Tim Walz wanting to have the borders open, We have Venezuelan gangs that are far worse than the MS-13 gang. I mean, this is about as bad as it gets. They're basically an army or a militia. And they came in and they literally brought their machine guns and they took over apartment buildings. They kicked people out and the gang moved in. In what scenario, if they did that to one home, would that be okay? And that shows the callous nature of the media, because the media is so desperate to have their team win, and their team is the political party currently led by Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. And if they have it their way, Harris and Walz. And so for them, they really are in their own bubble. If this happened to Martha Raddatz, if you had a Venezuelan gang come to her home and kick her out and take machine guns and kill her, this just happened not long ago where an elderly man in Michigan, gang members came to the home in a wealthy neighborhood in Michigan, outside of Detroit. And they murdered the man. They took him to the basement and they murdered him. And the wife was scared to death. She didn't know what had happened. But this is happening all over America in city after city. And there's one reason why it's happening. It's because there's open borders. There weren't open borders under Donald Trump. There are under Kamala Harris. She was given the authority to do something about it by Joe Biden. She did nothing except make it worse. So don't think the borders will ever close under Kamala Harris, because in fact, she wants to give more rewards. She wants to give the greatest award of all to these Venezuelan murderers. She wants to give them U.S. citizenship, and then they'll be entitled to every benefit there is. And they can come swinging up to Minnesota and get free college and free health care and free dental care and a free place to live. We are living in a time of complete and utter madness. And that's why, to me, there is no argument for voting for Harris or Walz. None whatsoever. These aren't just polite disagreements. This is a radical destruction of America. These are people who either they're so dim-witted they don't know this is the end of America, or worse, they're willing to play along with the ruse and allow America to be brought down and destroyed. Because I will tell you, that's exactly what's going to happen. Just in the state of Minnesota alone, car insurance rates just went up 61%. All over America, car insurance rates have been skyjacking. Why? Because of carjacking, because of open borders, and illegal aliens are pouring in. And then they are stealing cars and they aren't going to jail. In fact, they're being put right back out on the street again, oftentimes with no bail, because Kamala Harris had donated to a fund and $10 million were added to that fund because she lent her name to it so that criminals don't even have to do time. They're just put right back out on the street. These are utterly lawless people. Remember, it was Tim Walz, the current man running for vice president, who wouldn't even call out the National Guard. He let 5 miles of businesses, he let them all burn to the ground because he thought that was the anti-racist thing to do, that somehow he was on the side of those who are burning the businesses because somehow they've been victimized. So he was willing to allow people's businesses and homes be burned to the ground because he took the side of the criminals and the perpetrators and the murderers and the arsonists. These are the kind of people that seek to serve at the highest office in the land. They will not be the leader of the free world because there won't be a free world if they get in. That's what believers need to recognize. So if there are 40 million evangelicals sitting out this election, I will say it as gently as I can. Shame on you. You would allow your children and your grandchildren to live in a destroyed nation in absolute poverty, subject to rape and murder. Why would anyone do this? I can't understand it, Jan, that any evangelical would consider voting for Harris or Walz. We could spend 5 hours talking about this. Yeah. I give you example after example why people shouldn't. But we're supposed to be about salt and light. I'm not here saying Donald Trump is the greatest person or that the Republican Party is the party of Jesus. It is none of those things. But Kamala Harris and Tim Walz have a record, and they have demonstrated and proved that they are anti-biblical to the core. And Donald Trump, during his 4 years, did more for religious freedom, more for the family, more for life, more for marriage, more for Israel than any other president in modern times. So there's no contest here. Evangelicals have got to wake up, and they've got to get out and register and vote. And make sure you don't sit this out, because if you sit this out, there won't be another election where we'll have a meaningful choice in the future.
Thank you, Michelle, for being as blunt as you often are. And you are just off of 40 days of prayer and fasting, and many of my listeners were a part of that. And I'm just transitioning a little bit in the program here. Thank you. This is the fourth year you've done 40 days. And thank you, my audience. Those of you who did respond, do you have anything you want to share about that?
I do. Jan, this gave me more hope and inspiration. Yes. Every year it's been better and better. And this year, when Israel's existence was in the breach, those who were on the prayer call, they knew what to do. They were seeking their God. They were fasting. They were praying. They understood the importance of Israel and our obligation to pray. They understood what an opportunity and blessing it was for us as individuals, but also as a nation. So when Israel was under unprecedented attack from Iran and from her neighbors, she said 27,000 rockets launched against the Jewish people. That means Israel had to be right 27,000 times so her people didn't get destroyed, so her buildings and infrastructure didn't get destroyed. Well, the people on this prayer call, we were joining as one to pray every day. And so we brought current events every day into our prayer call so we knew what to pray and how to pray. And people were very mature and very intelligent, and they searched the scripture. We prayed according to the scripture. And we were one heart, one voice. We worshiped every day. We prayed every day for salvation. We prayed for our families. But we prayed for the United States. We confessed. We repented. We prayed for Israel. And the day when Israel was attacked by Iran and over 200 precision-guided ballistic missiles came in, it was historic. This had never happened before in the history of Earth. No other nation has had over 200 ballistic missiles pointed at it. That was enough missiles to kill the Jews and destroy Israel. And we gathered together in a second prayer call later in the day, and we sought the Lord, and we prayed for an additional 4 hours that day. then the Holy Spirit just assured us that that was enough, and the rockets stopped coming in. And we saw that the Lord performed a miracle. And the miracle is that not one Israeli was killed. Not one Israeli was injured. Most of the rockets were intercepted. Of those that weren't, they either landed on water, sand, or open fields. This is like a statistical impossibility. This was so miraculous. And at about the same time, God miraculously showed Israel that there was a second October 7th that Hezbollah was planning, yes, even bigger than the one from before. So we saw miracle after miracle. And our faith was so built up, Jan, because we saw God's miraculous hand, and we felt so privileged to be able to pray into these things exactly when it was needed the most.
You've kind of opened the door, and I'm going to go down this path. And I think to do that, and I got at least one clip of you and Pastor Gary Hamrick as well, but let me start here with a clip of you, because here you're talking about, and you do reference, this pact for the future. This is at the United Nations back in September. And I did programming, folks, on pact for the future, because it's talking about the formation of a coming one-world government. Michelle addresses that in this little clip.
The other thing that happened in the third week of September this year is that the United Nations, the first thing they did is they passed this resolution, which is a violation of the prophet, the book of Joel, chapter 3, verse 2, that says, "In the last days, the Lord will bring all nations to the valley of decision. And there they'll be judged by God based on one criterion, how the nations treated Zion, how they treated Israel." Yep. And there's three things. Did the nations seek to divide the land? This resolution divided the land. Did they seek to scatter the people from the land? That's what this resolution did. And the third thing was, did the nation cheapen Jewish life? Or cheapen the Jewish way of life? And they certainly did that as well. So it was a complete fail for the nations. It was a biblical resolution that was offered by the Palestinians, and it was a complete fail for the nations. It was a shocking thing. I read this and I thought, this is shocking that they violated Joel chapter 3, verse 2, to a T. And then the following Sunday, they did something extraordinary. That was Wednesday. On Sunday, they had what they called the Pact for the Future. And so they had this pre-negotiated document. The hammer went down. Nobody voted on it. But with one fell swoop of the gavel, it was adopted. It was this. It strengthened the power of the Secretary General of the UN so that he could declare a complex global shock. What does that mean? That means that if, in his estimation, there's some sort of a global crisis, including conflicts, wars, he could make himself essentially a global dictator. And so he could restrict right to travel. He could restrict global financial transactions. All sorts of global powers would come into place. We had the Tower of Babel in biblical times, which was a form of world government. But this is the first time since then, in 5,000 years of recorded human history, that a global government apparatus has been established in the world. So they first violated Joel chapter 3, verse 2. Then they established a perch or a mechanism for global governance. It was breathtaking.
Where have I read this
shocking.
Before? I've read this somewhere. A global one world government. Oh, yeah, the Bible. So, like, it's coming together. These are pawns on the chessboard, and they don't even realize that this is all part of even what the Bible predicts.
And I'm hoping Gary Hamrick will be with me next week here on Understanding the Times Radio. Michelle, thank you. It was a wonderful conversation between you and Pastor Gary.
It was such a blessing. I was speaking at the Family Research Council's Pray, Vote, Stand Summit in Washington, D.C. And normally they have all of the politicians. Donald Trump would have been there talking about issues and politicians. But this year, Family Research Council understood the desperation of our condition in the United States. And they decided the focus needed to be biblical and on prayer. And we needed to take a humble, repentant posture. And so we examined issues from a biblical perspective, as opposed to just hearing from politicians. So Gary Hamrick and I and others sat on a panel dealing with Israel and what the current events were with Israel. And after we did that panel, Pastor Hamrick asked me if I would come to his church service on Sunday morning and do a 10-minute interview with him on the miraculous nature and unprecedented nature of the events that took place over about a 15-day period. So I did that, and the clip that you played was just a small portion of that 10-minute interview that we did. We packed a lot of information in that 10 minutes so people could understand, because what I saw is that the news wasn't telling the story of the miraculous of what happened. Because if Israel is getting pounded by rockets, they barely even tell the world that. What was more incredible is that this was the first time in history. This had never happened before, that over 200 ballistic missiles had been fired to literally wipe out a nation, and that God himself intervened to spare that nation. Even the weapons manufacturer of the interceptors doesn't guarantee this type of interception. This is statistically impossible that the Israelis were spared from death and from injury, and that no major infrastructure was hit. Now, since that time, there have been Israelis that have been hit. Yeah. There was a drone attack that came from Hezbollah, and they killed four IDF soldiers, so there have been. But what we have seen is nothing short of miraculous. God's miraculous hand, it is the God who neither slumbers nor sleeps. It is the God whose strong right arm who saves Israel. And so I want to encourage all of your listeners, pay attention to what is happening right now in Israel. We are literally witnessing the miraculous happen in front of our eyes. And as the United States of America under Harris and under Biden are turning their backs on Israel, and that's exactly what they're doing. Just recently, Biden had stated to Netanyahu that he didn't want Netanyahu in a retaliation against Iran. A, he didn't want him to retaliate. B, he wanted him to just cease fire. This is after 400 rockets had been fired against Israel over the Yom Kippur weekend. And Joe Biden says, don't retaliate, cease fire. Would you stop firing if somebody was shooting at you, if you were in your house? What would you do? And he said, oh, no matter what, make sure that you don't harm Iran's money supply, which is their oil fields. Make sure that you don't hinder their nuclear weapon program, which they intend to use to wipe out Israel. And so at every turn, both Harris and Biden have been anti-Israel and pro-Iran, the chief state sponsor of terrorism in the world. It is inexplicable, but that's their posture. And so we can only pray that Prime Minister Netanyahu does exactly what he needs to do for Israel's best interests. And if there was any reason to vote for him, if you couldn't stand Donald Trump, it would be because he will let Israel be Israel, whereas Walz and Harris will not. They will prevent Israel from defending themselves. And we could very likely see a nuclear Iran come after Israel and then come after the United States. We aren't spared, because under Joel 3:2, we will receive the judgment for those nations that come against Israel. Those nations will receive the judgment back on their head, just like Haman. He wanted to kill all the Jews, and he received that judgment back in his head. That's Joel 3, verse 2. Woe be unto those nations.
So some of this goes back to Barack Obama. He issued $150 billion to be used for terror in Iran. America, for that matter, breathed new life into Iran. This was back under Obama and continues through the present administration. This terror that's going on was paid for, in a sense, by America. For 4 years, Iran got no money as they were under sanctions. My concern is, as you've already outlined, what on earth the next leftist administration will do to continue the policies that benefit the world's chief sponsor of terror, not a free nation, that benefit the world's chief sponsor of terror. I can't make this up, Michelle Bachmann. It is like it's a horror script out of a horror movie.
And under George W. Bush, his administration put sanctions on Iran because they are responsible for the rise of modern terrorism in the world. Remember back in the 1970s and 80s, we really didn't see terrorism. It began with plane hijacking, and those were primarily Islamic terrorists that were involved in that. But we didn't see really the rise of modern terrorism until the Ayatollah came into Iran. He came in, and then we saw 54 Americans who were kidnapped, and they let them go when Ronald Reagan came in. But But it was really when Barack Obama came in and he put the strangest policy into place. And it's that he wanted to see Iran get nuclear weapons. Now, why would you want to see the chief state sponsor of terrorism get nuclear weapons? That was his policy. So Barack Obama lifted all the sanctions on Iran. That's how Iran got $150 billion. That's how they took their money and they set up, they paid for Hezbollah, which is their forward operating base in Lebanon, to be a terror state, and Hamas and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad and the terror militias in Syria and the terror militias in Iraq and the Houthis, which is a terrorist organization in Yemen. Iran paid for all this. So they've set up a circle around Israel to entrap them with terrorists. That was under Barack Obama. He did all that. One of the last things that he did, we had prosecuted, convicted, and put in jail 27 different suppliers in the supply chain for Iran's nuclear weapon program. Most people don't even know this. Barack Obama let all 27 of those out of jail. Why? So they could go back and help Iran reinvigorate its nuclear weapon program that they seek to use against Israel and the United States. We're the big Satan. Israel's the little Satan. Why would he do that? Because obviously he's in league with Iran and Iran's goals. So then President Trump came in place. The sanctions went back on. There was very little terror going on during those 4 years because Iran didn't have any money. And then in comes Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. And what did they do? The first thing they did, they lifted the sanctions. And now under Biden and Harris, Iran has made over $200 billion in oil sales. That's where they get their money from. Now they've used all that money to pay for the October 7th, 2023 hostage taking and Day of Terror and Holocaust and all of these rockets, the 27,000 rockets that have been fired against Israel in 1 year's time, all paid for by the oil money that lifting the sanctions brought from Harris and from Biden and now under Walz. That's going to continue going forward. And who will be Israel's ally? It won't be America, because there won't even be a pretext of support from America. So America will be anti-Israel, and Iran will have free reign to have nuclear weapons. And I will tell you, the Ayatollah wrote a book when I was in Congress, and that book said, we will annihilate Israel in 25 years. That was about 9-10 years ago now. And so they will use the nuclear weapons. They would use them against Israel. They'll use them against the United States. For every believer who's listening right now, if you don't want to see yourself or your country or Israel annihilated by nuclear weapons, then you need to get out and you need to vote.
You're listening to Understanding the Times Radio. Jan Markell. Have on the line Michelle Bachman. She's Dean of the Robertson School of Government at Regent University. She served in Congress from 2007 to 2014. Many of you remember that she ran for President of the United States in 2012. Let me just ask you, kind of begging this kind of a question, Michelle, how do our times now compare to when you first of all began in Congress in 07 and then ran for president in 2012?
In 06 to 08, I was serving under President George W. Bush. Things were fairly tame. We had the Iraq War going on and we were present in Afghanistan. But when you look at the number of deaths and the lack of threat to the United States on our homeland, it was a different environment. Everything that George W. Bush did wasn't great, but it was a very different world. It was a much more peaceful world. Our economy was much better. And then I served under Barack Obama, and I saw a world that I no longer recognize. I couldn't believe what he put in place. That was Obamacare. And that's the reason why I ran for president in 2012, because we'd never had a discussion, because Nancy Pelosi famously said, we have to pass Obamacare to know what's in it. And most people didn't know what was in it. I had a pretty good idea, but I wanted to have the debate on a national stage so people actually knew how bad it was. And then people found out how bad it was. And then eventually Donald Trump came in and he took out the very centerpiece of Obamacare, which was the individual mandate, and he took the sting out of it. So he helped us on domestic policy, but he also helped us on foreign policy. What most people don't understand is we live here in America and we think about domestic policy, and that's incredibly important. But on an economy, if you have a good president, You can turn an economy around like that. Reagan did. Donald Trump did. Donald Trump could turn our economy around again in a snap. We wouldn't be paying $8, $9 for a jar of mayonnaise anymore. He knows how to do that. But what lasts longer and has actually more profound consequences are foreign policy. And that's where, I hate to say it, but whether it's Obama or whether it was Bill Clinton or whether it's Joe Biden, they have been a disaster on foreign policy. The most expensive thing any country can engage in is war. And that would be my fault against George W. Bush, too, with the wars that we were involved in. But what they have done in their absolute way that they've dealt with foreign policy is they have chosen, Biden and Harris and Obama have chosen to enrich our enemies. We're spending billions and billions of dollars on our enemies while we're slapping up our friends and our allies. We've been the worst. I hate to say this to your audience, but the United States of America, our tax money funded what happened to Israel with this Hamas war. We gave Hamas over $1 billion. Well, what did they use that money on? To build tunnels. We gave money that ended up going to Hezbollah. What did they do with it? They built tunnels. They built rockets, all to attack Israel. That's why we've got to have a president who understands foreign policy, because the Bible is concerned about one thing, and that is how do nations treat Israel? That's ultimately the only question that God is going to ask of the nations, of individuals. He wants to know, did we receive his promised Messiah? And did we believe his promised Messiah? That's what we as individuals have to answer to. What do nations answer? We answer, how did we treat Israel? And under the current Harris administration, we are anti-Israel as we have ever been, not giving them the weapons they need, telling them they can't protect themselves. Harris has essentially said to Israel, you have to lose this war to Iran. That's basically what she said. And so how are we going to be judged as a nation? And it's in real time. It isn't years down the road. It's now. We're being judged now for our anti-Israel positions. So if we want life to go well for us, then we need to bless Israel and not curse Israel. And under a President Trump, we blessed Israel and we were blessed as a nation. We had the highest metrics on all levels for all people in America, the highest stock market, the highest productivity, the highest wages, the most number of people working. We were at peace in the world. We were just on a steady incline. But now under Joe Biden, we've been going straight to the bottom. And so now it's like it says in the Bible, I set before you life and death. Will you choose life or will you choose death? That's Deuteronomy 28. And so as believers, I would say that to every voting age believer listening to your show right now, God is setting before you, my friends, life and death. With these two candidates, that's exactly what they represent. It couldn't be more stark. And so now it's up to us. Will we choose life or will we choose death? And if we choose to sit this one out or not vote for a candidate that will stand for life, then we, by default, are choosing death. And not just for ourselves, for our children, for our grandchildren, for our neighbors. And that's something that we don't want to have to answer for that.
Michelle, you and I, we've been working together probably 20 years, and I don't think we've ever seen such a somber time as we're going through at this present time. I just thank you for all that you're doing in the name of the country and, of course, of the Lord. I've got about a minute left. If you want it, you can have it.
Here's where my hope is. I have seen a miracle-working God protect and save Israel like I've never seen before. And what the Lord has really spoken to me is that self-same God can also save America now, because I've seen a tremendous number of people praying and fasting and crying out to God. There was a solemn assembly in Washington, D.C. not long ago, people crying out to God for deliverance and praying prayers of repentance. I do believe that this country will be saved. And the work that we do is through prayer and turning away from our sin and turning to God. But we also have one extra step, and that's registering and voting for the most righteous of the two candidates. Neither one's perfect. But we can either choose life or we can choose death. And I encourage everyone to choose life, because we have a miracle working God that we can trust. No one would have thought that Israel would have survived the onslaught, especially the perpetrators. They never thought Israel would survive 27,000 rockets in a year. And they did. And why? Because the God of Israel protected them. That same God will protect us if we turn away from our wicked ways and cry out to him. So I'm very hopeful about the future. Very hopeful if we do what God calls us to do, and that is turn from our wicked ways, turn to him, and cry out for his rescue.
Yes, folks, our future home and government is in heaven. But in the meantime, we are to strive for as godly a form of government as is possible, a government that favors life and liberty, offers opportunities for the spread of the gospel. Millions of people, millions are languishing in countries, in fact, in entire continents, that have no opportunity to establish a more righteous form of government. And if America was founded in part to spread the gospel and to stand by Israel, then it matters that we engage and not disengage in this political process here in November of 2024. I want to thank you for listening, and we will talk to you again next week.
Contact us through our website, olivetreeviews.org. That's olivetreeviews.org. Call us Central Time at 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444. You get our mail when you write to Olive Tree Ministries and Jan Markell, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. That's Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. All gifts are tax deductible. We are God's representatives in a world that has an expiration date. We are here to represent the truth and spread the truth, for God is not the author of confusion. We are on borrowed time as we watch all things fall into place.